This is Bradcast producer Desi Doyen. We're off today, so please enjoy this encore Bradcast recorded on August 26th, 2022.
My friends, we offer a starkly different vision of this country, a vision of a better America that's within our reach, that's within our hands, if we just vote.
Vote? Now there's an idea. By the way, where'd that guy come from?
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It is and it isn't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM, People Powered Radio in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI, Round Mountains KKRN, and Eureka's KGOE. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, Eugene's KEPW. In Lancaster, Pennsylvania's WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADRN, Minneapolis, St. Paul's, AM 950, KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe for your listening convenience on the internets. On the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, and Detour Talk, Blanketing Planet Earth. 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast that we are figuring out even as we begin it. Hi, Desi Doyen. How are you? Are you in one piece today?
I am sticking it together, trying
my best.
There
you go. Lots to make sense of today. We wish us all luck. When we originally booked today's guest, we had actually hoped to catch up with her at summer's end. After a whole bunch has happened since she was last here, as well as a whole bunch of stuff to look forward to now in the weeks and months ahead as we near the critical midterm elections, and Lord knows what else. So we've got a lot to discuss with her today about a whole bunch of stuff, but of course, we didn't know when we booked her that this would be yet another historic day that we might have guessed, because pretty much every damn day these days is some sort of historic day in some fashion in these decidedly unconventional times in which everyone's conventional wisdom, pretty much about everything, is now largely out the window. Thankfully, as we have been telling our listeners to forget about conventional wisdom in these times, these days.
It's like, well, that Chinese curse come true. May you live in interesting times. I could do with a little less interesting.
No kidding. Anyway, what we had hoped to talk to our guest about, and still will, since the last time she was on with us, which actually was not all that long ago, we have seen the passage of a landmark Democratic health and climate change spending bill, which nobody saw as even having a chance at being introduced, much less passed and signed since she was last here, along with a whole bunch of other legislative and political victories that largely were not even on the horizon back in mid-July. The GOP primary electoral defeat of Liz Cheney in Wyoming, who had previously been the number three Republican in the U.S. House, crushing electoral defeats for anti-freedom, anti-choice advocates at the ballot box, from the red state of Kansas to a conservative congressional district in the blue state of New York, suddenly changing fortunes for both Democrats and President Biden in the lead up to this year's critical November midterms, the landmark forgiveness by executive order of some $300 billion in federal student loans for about 40 million Americans, and of course, Among those and many other things, the unprecedented FBI search at a former president's home, finding sensitive national security documents, hundreds of them, and implicating him in, among other things, violations of the Espionage Act, obstruction of justice, and, of course, the Presidential Records Act. And, well, given the breaking news on Friday, we need to start there. On Friday, the Department of Justice unsealed a redacted version of the affidavit used to obtain a warrant to search Donald Trump's home, office, and storage spaces at his Mar-a-Lago compound in South Florida on August 8, based on probable cause that highly classified documents were being unlawfully stored there in violation of at least three federal criminal statutes. The 38-page affidavit was highly redacted to obscure specifics, according to the DOJ's previous court filings of ongoing investigations, the identity of witnesses, and the sources and methods of intelligence gathering used to determine that the stolen documents were being unlawfully stored at Mar-a-Lago, quote, constituting evidence, contraband, fruits of crime, or other items illegally possessed. DOJ previously said that the redactions to the affidavit were needed to protect, quote, the safety and privacy of a significant number of civilian witnesses when they filed their initial motion objecting to the unsealing of the affidavit. On Monday, the DOJ filed a motion objecting to the unsealing of the affidavit and noting, quote, disclosure of the government's affidavit at this stage would also likely chill future cooperation by witnesses whose assistance may be sought as this investigation progresses, as well as in other high-profile investigations. Well, okay, the bulk then of the unredacted portions of the document that was unsealed on Friday, much of it blacked out entirely, but what wasn't blacked out, much of it focused on what was found among the 15 boxes of material previously retrieved prior to the FBI search in early August from Donald Trump by the National Archives and Record Administration, or NARA, after they had attempted quite politely and quietly to get those documents and materials back from the former president for many, many months, almost a full year, in fact, before the National Archives finally made a criminal referral to the Department of Justice after becoming alarmed at finding so many classified documents among the returned materials and evidence of documents that should have been there but were not. As described in one unredacted portion of the redacted affidavit, unsealed on Friday, quote, from May 16 to May 18, 2022, FBI agents conducted a preliminary review of the 15 boxes provided to the National Archives and identified documents with classified markings in 14 of the 15 boxes. A preliminary triage of the documents, they write, with classification markings revealed the following approximate numbers: 184 unique documents bearing classification markings, including 67 documents marked as confidential, 92 documents marked as secret, and 25 documents marked as top secret. Based on my training and experience, this redacted person who wrote this affidavit,
the affiant,
thank you very much, writes, I know that documents classified at these levels typically contain NDI, or National Defense Information. The unredacted portion of the affidavit goes on to cite several different locations within Mar-a-Lago where more such documents were known or believed to be stored, including, quote, the storage room, F. POTUS's residential suite, F. POTUS is former POTUS, former president of the United States, Pine Hall, the 45 office, and other spaces within the premises, which the affidavit notes are not currently authorized locations for the storage of classified information or NDI, National Defense Information. Similarly, they write, based upon this information, I do not believe that any spaces within the premises have been authorized for the storage of classified information, at least since the end of the former president's administration on January 2021. As described above, evidence of the subject offenses has been stored in multiple locations at the premises. As to those offenses mentioned, the affidavit notes the search of the premises would include collection of, quote, all physical documents and records constituting evidence, contraband, fruits of crime, or other items illegally possessed in violation of 18 U.S.C. Section 793, 2071, or 1519. Those offenses, of course, we've discussed several times in detail on this program, including with national security journalist Marcy Wheeler last week, but essentially it includes the Espionage Act, obstruction, and the concealment or destruction of government records, including those owned by the U.S. under the Presidential Records Act, which essentially covers all records, you know, touched, shown to, written by, read, received, etc., by the president during his term of office. Whew. Joining us now to make sense of that news, just breaking within the past couple of hours, and, well, likely a whole bunch more today, is our old friend Heather Digby Parton, known to many simply as Digby, proprietor of the long-running Hullabaloo blog and longtime regular award-winning columnist for Salon.com. So, Heather, you were kind enough to be our go-to analyst joining us on the show following eight different House January 6th committee hearings in early summer. We gave you just a few weeks off as the committee completed its, you know, its first series of hearings. And now look what happened. Things seem to go very well for the nation, I'm noticing, when you don't come on the show, Heather. But welcome back anyway.
Well, thanks for having me, and I apologize.
So
it's all my fault.
Well, since the last time you were here, as mentioned just over a month ago, we learned about a whole new major crime that you and I did not even know existed, I believe, the last eight times that we spoke on air about Trump's crimes throughout the January 6th hearings all summer. Okay, we haven't talked to you since the search. What, if anything, have you learned just in the last couple of hours first since the release of this redacted affidavit for that search at Mar-a-Lago?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that we learned. I mean, there isn't a lot because obviously what we did learn specifically, mm-hmm. and expected to learn, I think, if they were going to release any of it, is, you know, what that first 15 boxes, what about that made the hair on the back of their neck stand up and mm-hmm. go, oh my God, you know, this is, we've got to pursue this. And what it turns out is that they found in the first 15 boxes that Trump turned over, and by the way, turned over apparently after rooting through them personally at Mar-a-Lago.
Yeah.
He turned over 15 boxes to the National Archives, and in it were 184 classified documents, some of them with the very highest classification. And at that point, the National Archives went, whoa, you know, we've got a problem. And it appears that what they also saw was that there were missing documents in series, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there'd be pages one. I'm assuming this. It's not listed out in the affidavit, but this is the only logical thing, that you'd see a series of you know, document mm-hmm. pages 1 of 22 or whatever, and there'd mm-hmm. be missing within there. So they're going, what's that about? So they referred it to the Department of Justice, mm-hmm. and, you know, very gently, compared to what would happen to you and me.
Yes.
I mean, let's
suppose
if we had been working in the White House and they suddenly found we were storing a bunch of the most highly classified, you know, classification of documents that exist, we'd have a problem with the Department of Justice pounding on our door the day they found out that it was there, right?
Yep.
So, but this is a previous president, and we all, you know, blah, 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 you know, it's a very delicate political situation, we don't want to be a banana republic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, so they decided very gently to say, you know, gee, would you mind, you know, maybe take another look, we think there's some more. And Trump at that point just completely stopped cooperating. And, you know, they were sort of, you know, hedging. He had these strange you know, lawyers who really obviously didn't know what they were talking about responding and being very, you know, if not obstreperous, they were being obstructionist and kind of saying, well, you know, the president had a, you know, he can declassify documents if he wants to, things that were really irrelevant to the question at hand.
Irrelevant because he can declassify, but he can't steal them. I mean, even if they were classified. And this is what Heather, you know, and I don't know if there's any clues on this offered in the affidavit, but since we haven't spoken to you since all of this broke, it's kind of shocking that for the past couple of weeks, the same question has come up. He was given all of these chances to return these documents time and time again, and he didn't, and he refused to. And so the question remains, what the hell was he thinking? Why did he do it? Why was he hoarding these documents at Mar-a-Lago even after the National Archives and then the DOJ and then a grand jury subpoena and then a personal visit, you know, from the DOJ's top counter espionage guy saying pretty pleased? All of that failed to get him to turn over all of these documents he took from the White House. Do you have any sense, either from the affidavit today or from, you know, whatever we've learned over the past couple of weeks, what the hell this is all even about? Are we any closer to understanding that?
Well, in that regard, I don't think we are any closer. I mean, that is the big question, obviously. What in the world was he doing with these documents? What was the purpose of it? And there's so much. You know, it's not just like a couple of things. Hey, I think in the beginning we sort of thought, well, maybe it's a couple of mementos.
Yeah, like the and love letters from Kim Jong-il or whatever,
right,
Kim Jong-un.
Yeah.
Exactly, which was also a terrible thing because there, who knows what kind of intelligence could be gleaned from some of that as well. But nonetheless, you know, the idea that maybe he just took a few things that just sort of meant something to him personally. Well, I mean, these are hundreds of documents.
Yeah.
This isn't just some little thing. And from the some of the bare clues that we have about what was in them from the search, which you know have been published. We know there was, you know, information and something to do with Roger Stone and a pardon and French President Emmanuel Macron and a whole, you know, I mean, it seems as though this covers a gamut of things. And now we know that some of the stuff that was in there was actual, you know, human intelligence. I mean, this is stuff that puts, if any of that had been found or, you know, taken by someone, or if Trump decided to, quote, share it, or, you know, sell it, you know, whatever he planned to do with this stuff. I mean, very, very dangerous stuff.
Is that, I mean, you know, you have to think that that is either what he was going to do, or he's just so stupid that he actually thinks, oh, I'll just keep this stuff around for mementos, despite the fact that he was told, you know, he is dumb enough that maybe he does think, oh, I'll keep these because, you know, that time Barack Obama sent me a letter when I became the president, and I want to keep that stuff. But he was told time and time and time again, and yet it's still unclear, Heather, whether he actually understands the law, or I don't know if you saw this on Thursday, I believe this was. This is in advance of the release of the redacted affidavit. Trump was sort of shouting all sorts of things from his social media, his website, Truth Social, hoping, I guess, to get someone's attention. One of his tweets, they're called truths on his dumb website since he was banned from Twitter, but one of them said, quote, the radical left Democrat prosecutors are illegally trying to circumvent, for purely political gain, the Presidential Records Act, under which I have done absolutely nothing wrong. It cannot be circumvented for me or any other president. They illegally raided my home, took things that should not have been taken. They even broke into my safe, an unthinkable act. So, is it my imagination, or does he seem to have the Presidential Records Act exactly backwards? I mean, you know, the law, it was adopted in 1975, the wake of Nixon's corruption, establishes that all records touched by the president during his term belong to the American people to be cataloged and stored by the National Archives. But that, you know, sort of brain fart of a comment from Donald Trump sort of seems to suggest that he thinks the Presidential Records Act means that he gets to keep any of those presidential records or something.
It does. I read that one, too, on Thursday and kind of shook my head. I'm going, is it possible that he really doesn't understand how that part of it works? But, you know, I mean, I suppose it is possible. And, in fact, you know, look, I mean, we've been talking about this all summer, right? Did he know that he was breaking the law? Did he know that he was staging a coup? Did he know that he didn't win the election? I mean, this is all the big question about mm-hmm. him, and it ends up being that the defense of Donald Trump ultimately is always, well, he's just too stupid to know better. Well, I mean, he was the president of the United States, and he's the front runner for the Republican nomination. So if that is his defense, that he's just too stupid to understand something as basic as the Presidential Records Act means that all the documents belong to the American people and are stored at the National Archives, well, then, you know, I mean, maybe there needs to be a new law passed about some kind of, you know, mental competency test. Because
I would hope so.
You know, this is absolutely ridiculous. And, you know, I actually find it hard to believe that he is quite that stupid. I mean, he's very dumb about a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
But I think that he actually does understand this, and he's just dancing as fast as he can, which is what he does. And when he gets into a jam, he just starts throwing everything out there and, you know, kind of. And he's even said it, you know, I quoted this many times in my column, a comment that just really stuck in my head. It was during the 2018 election, and he was holding a rally. And it suddenly occurred to him, it became obvious, that the Republicans might lose that election, and he mm-hmm. might lose the Congress. Mm-hmm. Of course, we know what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to his big cheering crowd there, he said, you know, it's possible maybe that we might lose, but you know what? You're wondering what I'm going to do. Well, you know what? I'll just figure it out. It's what I've always done in my life, and it's always worked out okay.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, this is how he just jumps from one thing to the other. I don't think he ever has. This is one thing I think people misunderstand about Donald Trump. There is no strategy. He's not thinking through anything. He's just, you know, and he's a very lucky guy. I mm-hmm. mean, I think you have to give him that. I mean, the guy's been very lucky in his life.
And he's never had any consequences whatsoever
exactly.
in his life.
He doesn't have to think ahead, because he just figures that when something happens, I'll deal with it. You know, I'll figure it out. I'll worm my way out of it. And that's where he is right now. But he's in a very, you know, difficult situation that he's never been in before. For one thing, he's got the full force of the Department of Justice of the United
mm-hmm.
States.
And no more protections.
Down on him.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have the protection anymore of being the president, and I think that's something that has really escaped him, perhaps up until now.
And
he really thought, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead. I was just going to jump in and say, I think that he is playing dumb, personally. I mean, yes, certainly he does say stupid things, but I'm not sure that that's an actual real misunderstanding. I think he's being like the old mafia dons that used to pretend to be mentally unstable when they were on trial.
Yeah.
And so what he'll do is he'll latch on to whatever he thinks will keep him out of trouble or will mm-hmm. Deflect and redirect the conversation. He'll never, ever, ever admit error, and I think he is smart enough to know that he should have concealed these documents. So
he should have concealed
yeah, that he should not give these documents up. He knows enough to figure out what documents to take, what documents not to give up, and what documents to fight for.
Well,
I think there's a method to that madness.
Actually, there are no documents that he is allowed to take.
Right, none whatsoever. But he decided to take them anyway, and has been told repeatedly that that's illegal. So he did that on purpose.
Now,
I've
heard from some of the super geniuses that we watch, you know, in the knee-jerk cable TV punditry business,
uh-huh.
that the FBI search of Mar-a-Lago has actually been great for Donald Trump and his political fortunes. Now, frankly, I don't buy that in the least, and it sort of seems like another attempted Jedi mind trick from the Republicans, kind of like the so-called blowback about Biden's student loan forgiveness, which we'll get to in a bit, I hope. But am I wrong about that? Is this somehow good news for Donald Trump, Heather?
No, and I couldn't agree with you more. When I was watching, in fact, a friend of mine who listens to NPR all the time, you know, good straight mainstream, mm-hmm. you know, political you know, observer, was stunned when she heard, when this story broke, when she heard the first thing coming out of their mouths was how this was benefiting Donald Trump and Donald Trump's reaction to it. It's like, you know, is, she said to me, is that really the most important thing about this? And of course it isn't, you know, but he has this, this somehow this, this ability to, you know, to, I think people think that he's kind of a magician. And in a way, I suppose it's not surprising because he is, has managed to, as we were just saying, worm his way out of every problem from, you know, the time he was a young kid, basically. So, you know, maybe you can understand that, that they're going, okay, how's he going to break, how's he going to worm his way out of this one? You know, that's sort of the first reaction. But in this case, it's really, really absurd because Donald Trump, who apparently, you know, he has now bought into his own hype that he is still the president, the legitimate president. And he's basically like Napoleon in exile in Elba, right? He's a president in exile at Mar-a-Lago. And, but somehow or another, he convinced himself that that meant that he was, you know, that, that he had the same protections he had as president. And it, that has given him this, this kind of sense that he, that they can't touch him because of his position. He's the head of the Republican Party. He's going to run again. He was the president who was denied his second term, blah, blah, blah. And so he actually was just, I mean, kind of incredibly foolish in the way that he handled this, because had he done, you know, had he just done it the way that, that anybody, you know, normal would have done it, aside from not taking them in the first place, would have been to say, oops, my bad, big, you know, confusion in the last days, and a lot of stuff got put into boxes, I didn't know about it, here you go. And nobody, you know, I mean,
they gave
yes, he still could have been held liable for doing that, but nobody would have held him liable for doing that.
They gave him one chance after another, after another. I've got to get to a quick break here, and I want to move from our old ridiculous president to our new,
invigorated
president. After this break, but so very quickly, sort of two somewhat predictive questions, speculative. Feel free to ignore them if you like. But any guesses, any speculation as to who the supposed insider mole is who reportedly tipped the DOJ off to all the documents being stored at Mar-a-Lago that were not turned over back over to the DOJ back in June when, you know, what we'll describe as Trump's lawyers signed a certification saying that that's it. That's everything Trump took. Everything has now been returned to the DOJ. Any idea who that insider? That's my first predictive question for you.
Well, I originally had sort of thought and I had read some speculation that it was a Secret Service agent who actually cared about the, you know, the security of the country as much as the security of Donald Trump in Mar-a-Lago. But the affidavit suggests that at least one of the people who've been working with the FBI on this, what they called them, and they said it was something like 18 different civilians or whatever.
Yeah.
So the word civilian suggests to me that it's not. I mean, I have to assume it's somebody who works closely with Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and there are plenty of staff members that do, and he's probably got secretaries and various assistants and people like that, so who knows? But other than that, I honestly don't have a clue.
All right, well, I hope it's driving him crazy at this point.
Oh, you know it is.
Not a long drive, I guess. And the sort of the last question for this block, last predictive question. So of all of these many ongoing sort of crescendoing investigations of Trump, all seemingly coming to a head, with the stolen documents at Mar-a-Lago, the bank tax and insurance fraud probe by the New York Attorney General, the criminal conspiracy probe by the Fulton County District Attorney in Georgia investigating his attempt to steal the 2020 election in that state, and of course the seemingly almost forgotten at this point January 6 insurrection investigation, in both investigations, I should say, in both Congress and the DOJ. Heather Digby Parton, any idea which I don't even know if it can be quantified, but which one of those is actually the worst news for him at this point?
Well, I think the worst news for him at this point is the one that's happening right now with these records down there. And here's the reason. You know, nothing shows more chutzpah and gall than this man, the man who led the lock her up chants for the last 5 years, saying that Hillary Clinton needed to be put in jail for what was she accused of? For mishandling classified information.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that this guy did what he did in light of that, it's almost too much to bear. And I have a feeling that anyone beyond just the totally brainwashed cult members have got to be feeling, got to be feeling a little bit uncomfortable about that. So on a political level, I think this one hits him in a way. I mean, it shouldn't be that way. It should be the coup, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's the worst thing he ever did. But this one hits just, it's simple and easy to understand, and it is so incredibly galling that he would have done this under the circumstances.
By way of reminder, the lock her up chants were for Hillary Clinton, who was sent on her private email 3 documents.
Right.
That were marked with a C on it for confidential, which is the lowest level of classified records. Nothing like what has been obtained from Donald Trump here. Let me take a quick break. We'll come back with more Heather Digby Parton to discuss the current president of the United States and his Democratic Party and their seemingly quickly changing political fortunes at summer's end, just before Labor Day, after which the midterm election season kicks into very high gear. And from the remarks of the president on Thursday night, it sort of seems like they already have. Lots to ask Heather about on that right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. You are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Hey, this is Brad. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Bradcast. Welcome back to The Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We are still joined by our guest, the great Heather Digby Parton of Salon. Of course, Desi Doyen is here with us as well. As mentioned, on Thursday night, Joe Biden gave a stem winder of a speech, a barn burner, which really kicked off the midterm election season for the Democrats in a rally. He went on for 27 minutes, and it was kind of well, let me play you a sample of it, and then we'll get Heather's thoughts on all of this. This is the president on Thursday night in Maryland, Rockford, Maryland. Is that right, Des?
Yes, at a DNC rally.
There you go.
Folks, we're just 76 days away from the midterm election. And to state the obvious, there's a lot at stake. So I want to be crystal clear about what's on the ballot this year. Your right to choose is on the ballot this year. The Social Security you paid for from the time you had a job is on the ballot. The safety of your kids from gun violence is on the ballot. The very survival of our planet is on the ballot. Your right to vote is on the ballot. Even the democracy. Are you ready to fight for these things now? Well, then you need to do one thing. Vote. Vote. And it's not hyperbole. Now you need to vote to literally save democracy again. I believe America's at a genuine inflection point. And Americans are going to have to choose. You must choose. Will we be a country that moves forward or backward? Will we build a future or obsess over the past? Will we be a nation of unity, of hope, of optimism? Not a nation of anger, violence, hatred, and division. Trump and the extreme MAGA Republicans have made their choice to go backwards, full of anger, violence, hate, and division. But we've chosen a different path. Forward, the future, unity, hope, and optimism. We choose to build a better America. This fall, there'll be a choice between these two visions. And we're delivering for the American people now with American workers in American factories producing American-made products. We took on the NRA, and we beat them. We just passed the first significant gun safety legislation in 30 years in this country. I just signed in the law the PAC Act to take care of those veterans who were exposed to those burn pits. I just signed in the law the Historic Inflation Reduction Act. We had to take on the big drug companies to pass this bill, and we did. For decades, Big Pharma won. But not this year. The American people won, and Big Pharma lost. We also had to take on the climate deniers. And guess what? We beat them. For decades, these climate deniers blocked any meaningful progress in dealing with climate crisis. But not this year. This year, the American people won, and the climate deniers lost. For decades, the biggest corporations and the wealthiest Americans who fought to block a fair tax code. And for decade after decade, they won. But this year, they lost. The American people won. You'd think if the Republicans really cared about reducing inflation, they would have voted for the Inflation Reduction Act. Every single Republican voted against lower prescription drug prices, against lower health care costs, against tackling the climate crisis, against lower energy costs, against creating good-paying jobs, against the fair taxes. Every single one. Every election is a choice. Well, the alternative to the Democrats are the MAGA Republicans. So how extreme are these MAGA Republicans? In red states after red state, there's a race to pass the most restrictive abortion limitations imaginable. But these MAGA Republicans won't stop there. If the MAGA Republicans win control of the Congress, it won't matter where you live. Women won't have the right to choose anywhere. Anywhere. MAGA Republicans don't have a clue about the power of women. Let me tell you something. They are about to find out. They're coming after your Social Security as well. Do you want to put your Social Security in the hands of Ted Cruz and Marjorie Taylor Greene? But it's not just Social Security. That includes Medicare, veterans benefits, and everything else. These guys never stop. And we're never going to stop either. My friends, we offer a starkly different version and vision of this country, a vision of a better America that's within our reach, that's within our hands, if we just vote. If we elect two more senators, we keep the House and Democrats. We'll codify Roe v. Wade. We'll ban assault weapons. We'll protect Social Security and Medicare. We'll pass universal pre-K. We'll restore the child care tax credit. We'll protect voting rights. We'll pass election reform and make sure no one ever has the opportunity to steal an election again. We're at a serious moment in our nation's history. The MAGA Republicans don't just threaten our personal rights and economic security. They're a threat to our very democracy. They refuse to accept the will of the people. They embrace political violence. They don't believe in democracy. This is why, in this moment, those of you who love this country, Democrats, independents, mainstream Republicans, we must be stronger, more determined, and more committed to saving America than the MAGA Republicans are destroying America. And we, the people, will still determine the destiny of America. If we, the people, stand together, we will prevail as we, the people. We just have to keep the faith. We just have to persevere. We just have to vote. Vote. We just have to remember who we are. We are the United States of America, and there's nothing beyond our capacity if we do it together. So let's get it done. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
That was Joe Biden, Sleepy Joe in Maryland on Thursday night. Heather Digby Parton, where did that guy come from?
I don't know, but he's woke in the original sense of the word.
Yes.
He definitely is awake. I don't know, but it seems to me that Dark Brandon is rising here.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've talked to your audience about what the Dark Brandon meme is.
I have not, but feel free.
Okay. I'll try and do it in a nutshell.
Okay.
there's a meme out there done by the right wing called, you know, Let's Go Brandon,
right.
And it's on flags and bumper stickers and everything. And what that refers to is a moment at a NASCAR race when the people in the stands were apparently chanting F you, Biden, and the broadcaster, the host who was hosting this, this moment, heard it and said, "Oh, isn't that nice? They're saying, 'Let's go, Brandon,'" who was the name of the race car driver who just won. The right wing has turned that into a metaphor for F you, Biden, and it's all over everything. Well, the left now suddenly on social media has come up with this other this sort of retort to that called Dark Brandon, and Dark Brandon is referring to Joe Biden, and it's usually done with a picture of him with these laser eyes, you know, coming out in light of all the successes that he's had legislatively in the last few months,
weeks,
and particularly
really,
the passage
too.
Of the I mean, it's been a rather stunning success story. I mean, honestly, and you know, I'm not one to just, you know, I'm not a big Joe Biden, you know, pat on the back kind of person, but I am really surprised that under very difficult circumstances with a very, very narrow majority dealing with divas like Sinema and Manchin, and, you know, having to come up against a very low approval rating and a right wing that's gone completely nuts, out of its mind, bonkers, this administration has managed to pass a whole lot of really important big legislation, and in some of it, a good part of it, bipartisan. I mean, which no one would have expected that anybody could get done. And it's not just him, but, you know, the Democrats in Congress have been, you know, unusually effective. You know, I mean, kind of, whoa, where'd that come from? You know,
say the
same thing about
Chuck
Schumer, you know. But in any case, you know, what has happened is here coming up to the end of the summer, going into the fall campaign, we're seeing evidence, and it's not just because, you know, Joe Biden has accomplished a bunch of things, although I do think that that has had a galvanizing effect. The real galvanizing effect has been, you know, what the right has been doing, particularly the Supreme Court with the, you know, with the abortion ruling. And this assault on democracy, which the January 6th committee, as we have documented, you know, very thoroughly over the past few months, has sort of brought up this threat to democracy as being an important issue, and as well as guns after the horrifying mass shootings this summer. So you've got this sort of confluence of events that have happened between some very positive news by Dark Brandon, our President Joe Biden, as well as this, you know, this backlash to what's been going on the right. And I think, you know, what surprised me in watching the rally last night, and seeing, I didn't see the whole thing, I saw it all in clips and on YouTube, was the fact that this crowd, you know, I'm going, wow, that sounds almost like another kind of rally we watch. You
another
know, a bunch
guy.
Of people.
Yeah.
The former guy. Very excited people. Now, granted, it was DNC rally. You know, it's not like just a bunch of strangers at the mall or something. But you just don't see that kind of enthusiasm. And when you look at the results of these special elections and the fact that Democrats are way overperforming what anybody would have said just a few months ago in going into the fall campaign with special elections and primaries, and the, you know, ballot measure like the one in Kansas, the abortion measure, which was a landslide in favor of abortion rights, I can see why he's feeling his oats. And, you know, you got to give the old guy credit, because his approval ratings are in the dirt, and they're starting to tick up a little bit, maybe. He's up in the low 40s now.
Well,
that's not great. But there he is out there. He's fighting like hell, and I, you know, he's not pulling a Trump and was stomping around pouting over it.
Let me tell you, Desi Doyen was more exhausted trying to cut that 27 minute speech down to 6 than he was delivering it at 80 years of age or whatever he's at.
Yeah, and I think he did a fantastic job of drawing that very stark contrast between Republicans and Democrats. I mean, all the stuff that he's accomplished, let's say just in the last week or month or so. All of that stuff has been stuff that's been blocked for decades by Republicans. Medicare not being able to negotiate prescription drug prices, climate action, guns, health care, all of that he was able to get done in just a short period of time, sort of showing, hey, look, if you do this, then we can overcome the Republican obstruction that has prevented all of this stuff for decades.
Heather, you argue in your piece at your column at Salon today after detailing Biden and the Democrats' rather, you know, extraordinary accomplishments that we've mentioned here, really extraordinary by any historic measure, just to get so much of that done over the past month or two. But you argue the biggest problem for the GOP is, of course, the Supreme Court ruling overturning Roe v. Wade and its previously constitutionally protected privacy rights and reproductive freedoms, essentially that the dog has finally caught the car, and now the GOP has no idea what to do with that car. You cite, by way of evidence, the Trump-backed GOP nominee for U.S. Senate in Arizona, Blake Masters, who has apparently now removed all of his radical stuff on abortion from his website this week, even after previously running this ad when he was back when he was hoping to win the GOP nomination.
There's a genocide happening in America. Under Roe v. Wade, the federal government recognizes a right to kill babies in the womb. And so every year, hundreds of thousands of young lives are destroyed. 30% of black babies are aborted in this country. We're talking 20 million babies since 1973. We gotta get back to not killing babies. That starts with overturning Roe. I'm Blake Masters. I'm running for the U.S. Senate in Arizona. And I approve this message because life is always worth protecting.
Well, I have a feeling he's not going to be running that ad anywhere soon. Heather, why is that ad for a guy who, you know, running for a U.S. Senate seat in Arizona shot in a scary cornfield?
Yeah, I think he's trying to be a regular guy. But everything about that ad, if people should go to YouTube and watch it, because he looks really scary, too. I mean,
yeah.
This guy is a real, I mean, he's something else. He really is something else. And he's running down there in Arizona against Mark Kelly. And, you know, this guy is, he's a totally cynical phony, as are many of these people, particularly the ones that Donald Trump endorsed. You know, Oz, and, you know, Dr. Mm-hmm. Oz in Pennsylvania, and J.D. Vance in Ohio, this guy, Blake Masters, down in Arizona. And they all took these very, very far-right, you know, radicals, anti-abortion zealotry as part of their agenda in order to win those nominations, and they won them pretty handily. And what it illustrates is that, you know, they jumped on that before the, you know, the Dobbs ruling from mm-hmm. from the Supreme Court. But nonetheless, you know, they stuck with it. This is what they did to win their primaries. And now they are having to face the fact that they are way, way out of the mainstream in their swing states. These are, you know, these aren't, you know, this isn't Mississippi. Well, let's just put it that way. You know, places where that kind of rhetoric can win them elections in a general election. This is very, very radical stuff.
And
they're all starting to back off. And,
yes.
And you can see, you know, and I don't think it's going to work. I mean, the Democrats should just run that ad, as far as I'm concerned. You know, buy time and run that ad.
Well, you suggest,
what
Heather,
it shows,
yeah,
to highlight that. Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, you suggest that the abortion issue is going to haunt Republicans, not just for the midterms, but over and over again, as one state after another grapples with the mess they've made for themselves. You see this as a long-term problem for Republicans, not just this year.
I do. And it's a problem, you know, in two ways. It's a problem because it's way out of the mainstream, and they're stuck with these. You know, it's one thing to just be able to. They let their zealots, their anti-abortion zealots, run around for years, making the most grotesque claims about abortion. You know, remember the whole baby parts that they did. You know, you remember all that, and doing personhood laws where, you know, they have the same, you know, legal rights as a human being from the moment of fertilization.
Which I Blake mean, Masters was a champion
he
for
was
those
a,
fetal
He was part of it. He was one who endorsed that. Yeah. And, you know, this is the kind, they went way, way out there. They let these people just take the most extreme positions. And they pushed it into the mainstream of the Republican Party, I mean, which didn't used to be, I mean, you remember, they didn't used to be this extreme. And in fact, it's only in recent years that they've adopted this no exceptions for rape and incest or health of the mother. I mean, these are very extreme positions that were never held by the mainstream of the Republican Party until recently. So they just let them do that because they had Roe versus Wade to protect them. As long as that was the law of the land, they could say whatever they wanted, get their people all fired up, pretend to have some kind of moral, you know, standing. But they don't have it anymore. That's been stripped away. The Supreme Court didn't do them any favors with that because now they are left with this. They are left with a party that has committed itself to a very, very radical position on abortion rights, and it is way out of the mainstream of the way Americans feel. Even people who, many of whom consider themselves pro-life, don't believe in this sort of, you know, extreme, you know, the no exceptions in the case of rape or incest or things like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, they've backed themselves into a corner on this, and I do believe it's going to haunt them for a long time to come because look what happened. It got thrown back to the states. That's 50 different battlegrounds they have to fight on this.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead. Finish.
Well, I used to think that was more of a problem for the pro-choice side because they would have to put resources into state after state and do that. But I, seeing it unfold the way it has and their radicalization just in the past few years, their extreme radicalization on the issue, I now see it as a bigger problem for them. This is just not going to be popular, and Democrats are going to run on it. If you look at what happened in that race, the special election up in New York 19, where this guy Pat Ryan beat the Republican, this was a Republican that was kind of a, you know, sort of a middle of the road kind of guy who didn't have the extreme position on abortion. But, you know, he's a member of the party that does.
And it's
Ryan
gonna
beat him.
Yep. And it's going to taint all of them in all of those states, including a lot of states that people consider to be red states, you know, like Kansas. We could see some, we could see some stunning numbers, some stunning upsets even happen in November. Heather, I've got only a minute or so here, but I want to make sure to hit this because, you know, people are looking, oh, the Democrats' fortunes are going well now. Oh, until Biden screwed up by giving away all that money, $300 billion to forgive student loans. Can you explain to me, Heather, why giving anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000 in forgiveness for these loans to some 40 million low and middle-income Americans, many of them disproportionately African-American? Can you explain to me why that is a bad thing for Democrats and Joe Biden? Because, boy, that sure is what the Republicans and Fox News and, yes, even on the non-wingnut news outlets have been telling me for the past 24 hours since Biden announced this executive action. Why is that a bad thing? And is there anyone who is so mad at him about it that they were otherwise going to vote for him or the Democrats, but they just won't now?
Absolutely not. There's nobody who would do that, who has their mind changed by this. And, you know, more importantly, Joe Biden made this as a promise in the campaign. The Democrats promised that they were going to do something about this. This is the fulfillment of that promise, and it's actually a good one. They, you know, he went the extra mile on it and actually did a bigger program than I think people expected, doing some things that are super important to virtually everyone who has student loans, in capping the monthly payment at 5%, and then they'll write off the debt at 10 years and 20 years, depending on your circumstances. These are really, really meaningful things to people in their real lives. And to me, the furious reaction by the right and the right-wing media to this suggests that they know that too, and that is why you're seeing this. You know, they think it's a slam dunk. They're trying to, you know, change the narrative to it being terrible for the economy, and I don't think it's going to work. I mean, this is a program that Democrats ran on, that Biden won 7 million more votes than Trump on, and I couldn't be more thrilled, to tell you the truth, that he actually did it, and that I think it will help him. You know, there are a lot of young people out there. And by the way, there's something like 4 million people over the age of 60 who are carrying $40,000 in school loan debt.
Wow.
So there's a bunch of other people, too, who are going to benefit from this,
why
not just young people.
I sort of referred to this earlier in the show as a Jedi mind trick. And here's the thing. These Jedi mind tricks, they work when folks on the left, Democrats, et cetera, believe it. Oh, no. They're complaining. They're saying this is a bad thing. Don't buy it. Don't repeat it. Don't, pass it on as if it is real. They're trying to get into your head. It's nonsense.
Yep. And by the way, Dark Brandon and his White House did not do that, and they came out throwing it right back in Marjorie Taylor Greene's face and all these, Rob
Portman, yes,
all these people who took the PPP loans. They're out there naming names. I'm stunned at how aggressive that
they
was
are throwing it
and
back.
How effective it is.
Yeah, hey, Marjorie Taylor Greene, why did you let the government forgive $1.4 million in PPP loans that you took out? Stuff like that. They are not backing down. Dark Brandon for the future. Heather, I got to get out. My thanks, as always. I suspect we will talk to you soon when the new January 6th hearings begin again, in theory. At some point in September. I will look forward to that. You can find her work, as always, of course, at salon.com and at digbysblog.net and on the Twitters at digby56. Okay. Thank you, Heather. Always great catching up. We will be talking soon.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. So, yeah, I know. I blew through the last break again. I've been doing that a lot lately.
Well,
we haven't. Yeah.
There's just so much to talk about.
We haven't spoken with her. It's only been a month since we spoke to her, and I didn't even get to half the things on my list that I wanted to ask her about. Usually, because she was, of course, the first person I thought of. You know, we've been bringing her on for years. She was with us the day that Donald Trump came down the escalator.
Correct.
June 16, 2015. We usually bring her on for the big moments in the pre and post Trump presidency and when it was happening, the presidency.
Yep.
We've always brought her on. So I immediately had thought of her. She was on vacation, taking some time off over the summer. So this was our first chance to bring her back on. And as you can tell, we had a lot to catch up with.
Yeah, there's plenty of history going on that we're getting our front row seat at right now.
Speaking of vacation, we're going to take some time off ourselves until after the Labor Day holiday. Some very much needed time. But let me say this by way of warning. That means that there's going to be all sorts of terrible things that happen over the next week. Donald Trump will probably be indicted, thrown in jail.
Well, we never know, but lots of stuff does tend to happen when we're not here.
When we're not here. We would come back and talk about it, but I will be locked into a cave underground.
Off the grid
for just a few hours. Pretty please. Anyway, just want to let you know, we're fine. We will see you soon. After the holiday break, it's back to the September, back to the January 6th committee hearings, back to the midterm elections.
Oy.
In full at that point. So buckle up. Lots ahead. All right, got to get out. My thanks again to Salon's Heather Digby Parton, to our fantastic producer, Desi Doyen, to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. It is always appreciated. It is always an honor. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other, we make them all available for free, no paywall ever, at bradblog.com, so you can download them, share them with your friends, family, enemies, and everyone else. Thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help us fill up our Prius over the next week or so. Greatly appreciated. bradblog.com/donate. Drop me an email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am The Brad Blog. Maybe I will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.